body of the man whose car fell into the Clark Fork on Tuesday has been identified. Good evening, I'm Conrad Scheid.
And I'm Corin Cates Carney, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition. Catherine Fry has a report from the scene of the Plum Creek Fiberboard Plant explosion.
And teachers at Paxton Elementary are running drills to prepare for the worst-case scenario in a school lockdown. The Missoula County Coroner has identified the man whose body was pulled from a vehicle in the Clark Fork River as a 71-year-old from Missoula. Officials recovered Melvin Arthur Beadle's body yesterday, a day after a maroon SUV drove off a fast food parking lot and into the river. The coroner's office said the cause of Beadle's death has not yet been determined. The Missoula Police Department spokesman Travis Welsh says searchers found the vehicle completely submerged and upside down near a trestle about 200 yards downstream from where it entered the river. He says a line attached to the vehicle caused it to turn right side up with the window top with the top at the surface, and a rescuer was able to get access through a window.
And another news from around the state. An explosion and fire at Plums Creek's Columbia Falls plant earlier this week will keep operations shut down for a month. The fire happened in the medium-density fiberboard plant. The neighboring sawmill and plywood mill were unaffected, and operations will continue at those facilities. More than 60 workers on the shift at the time evacuated safely, and many worked to contain the fire until firefighters arrived. Flathead reporter Catherine Fry spoke with the Vice President of Northwest Resources and Manufacturing for Plum Creek, Tom Ray, who says investigators are looking into the cause of the explosion.
The call came in around 3 in the afternoon on Tuesday. An explosion and fire at Plum Creek's medium-density fiberboard plant in Columbia Falls.
Upon the fire, our personnel immediately hit the deluge system, which goes live with all the fire suppression equipment. The water starts, you know, coming into the plant through the overhead sprinklers. At that point, some of the people also manned hoses to attempt to, contain the fire until the fire department got there.
Vice President of Northwest Resources and Manufacturing, Tom Ray with Plum Creek, says the rest of the employees evacuated to a staging area where roll call and head counts are conducted.
Well, as far as the evacuation and the fire suppression, that all worked well. And again, everyone did an orderly, safe evacuation of the plant. What we need to do through the investigation is find out the cause and remedy that situation in the future.
Ray says the MDF plant employs about 180 people and had about 66 on shift when the fire broke out Tuesday. All were accounted for, and Ray says no injuries were reported. MDF is a refined wood fiber pressed into a mat with resin and used in furniture, cabinetry, and housing. The materials are flammable, and there have been cases of explosions caused by wood dust in other places, but Ray says the investigation has not yet identified the cause.
Wood dust within the plant itself is very minimal because of our housekeeping. We have very good housekeeping procedures in place. Now, we do use the wood fiber that's used in the mat, and we have to look at the cause, but we're not going to speculate on what might have happened.
Ray says investigators include a fire expert hired by Plum Creek, insurance adjusters, and representatives from the Occupational Safety and Hazard Administration, or OSHA. He says Plum Creek brought in a structural engineer who determined the building itself was sound.
Then we began to assess some of the equipment, and all the primary lines are really undamaged from the fire. Most of the damage is from water and the electrical and computer systems that we have, in some cases, are compromised. And so that is going to be probably a bigger issue of repair on the electrical side than actually the mechanical.
Ray says the plant is expected to reopen in about a month. And in the meantime, employees are working regular shifts, doing cleanup work.
After we finish the cleanup phase, we will begin the repair phase, and they'll be involved in that as well. If at any time we do have some extra employees that aren't needed in the process, we'll use them for vacation coverage relief at some of the other plants that we have here in the valley. So our intent is to keep everyone employed through the work stoppage here.
Ray says they currently do not have any cost estimates on the damage from the fire. Catherine Fry reporting from the Flathead.
two residents of the Blackfeet Indian Reservation, have been sentenced in separate cases related to an ongoing federal investigation into corruption on reservations across Montana. Sandra Marie Sanderville, 58, of Browning, was sentenced today to 2.5 years in prison after pleading guilty in February to theft from an Indian government receiving federal grant funds. Sanderville was the director of the Blackfeet Tribe's Temporary Aid to Needy Families program from 2006 until she was suspended in 2010 and dismissed the following year. The tribe runs the federal program, which gives cash assistance to poor families. Prosecutors say she overpaid between 16 and 20 TANF recipients and ineligible clients, who then kicked back a portion of the money to her. Sanderville restricted access to the accounts, preventing other workers from seeing the computer files, the U.S. Attorney's Office said. She tried to delete the files after the tribe began an investigation, but investigators used a backup file to track the transactions. She ultimately admitted to the scheme and said she has a gambling problem. U.S. District Judge Brian Morris ordered Sanderville to pay more than $297,000 in restitution. Last month, Morris sentenced Browning resident Sean Ogier, 38, to 9 months in prison and ordered him to pay more than $6,400 in restitution after Ogier pleaded guilty to bank fraud. Ogier cashed and deposited forged checks from a bank account under the name of the Child and Family Advocacy Center, an account controlled by his father, Delisle Shiani Ogier, and Francis Onstad, prosecutors said. Ogier and Onstad, the former leaders of a tribal program for troubled youth called the Pocah Project, previously pleaded guilty to defrauding the Pocah Project. More than $230,000 was embezzled from the federal grant program and laundered through the Advocacy Center account. Ogier tried to take $10,300 from the account. He admitted he stole the money when interviewed by FBI agents. The Pocah Project and Sanderville investigations are connected to the Guardian Project, an initiative by the U.S. Attorney's Office to investigate fraud and embezzlement in Montana's Indian country.
A judge has sentenced an 18-year-old Great Falls man accused of raping six girls between the ages of 12 and 14 to 60 years in Montana State Prison. In handing down the sentence yesterday, District Judge Greg Pinsky disregarded a plea agreement in which prosecutors recommended 10 years in prison and 35 years probation for Christian Underhall. The Great Falls Tribune reports Pinsky called Underhall a serial rapist and said there was a high likelihood he would find more victims given the opportunity. Underhall says he feels bad for the people he's hurt and that sex is like a drug for him. Underhall pleaded guilty in March to one count of sexual intercourse without consent. Sentencing in a separate plea on similar charge is pending before another judge.
The Montana Human Rights Bureau will hear next week a sexual harassment complaint filed by an MSU Northern dean that accuses the school's former provost of inappropriate touching. Randy Bachmeyer, the dean of extended studies, says in his complaint former provost Rosalind Templeton inappropriately touched his leg, arm, shoulder, and back several times between 2010 and 2013. Templeton denied the allegations in documents related to the investigation that were obtained by the Havre Daily News. She said she used touching to communicate with others, such as a pat on the arm or back, but said it was not sexual. A Human Rights Bureau investigator found sufficient evidence to proceed with the complaint, and a hearing will be held at the Havre campus beginning Monday. The investigator also found the university officials may have retaliated against Bachmeyer's complaint, which was filed in May 2013, by passing him over when Templeton resigned in August. The Montana Board of Regents is representing Northern in the case. Regent spokesman Kevin McRae said the university's own investigation found no wrongdoing and the school refutes the charges. Bachmeyer alleges in the documents that Templeton at different times rubbed his upper leg with her palm, stroked his arm in a sexual manner, and touched his shoulders and back inappropriately. He said he asked her to stop and went out of his way to avoid her. The university did not publicly release a reason for Templeton's resignation in August. Another dean suggested Bachmeyer as a candidate to replace Templeton, but Chancellor Jim Limbaugh allegedly said, quote, it wouldn't look good for someone who'd filed a complaint to get the position, unquote, the investigator's report said. Limbaugh denied making the statement. The vacancy announcement allowed only those candidates who were full professors, which Bachmeyer was not. Limbaugh said the requirement came after a discussion between himself and Montana State University President Wadeed Cruzado.
It'll sound like something terrible is happening inside a Missoula elementary school tomorrow, but rest assured, it's all staged and meant to train teachers and staff for a worst-case scenario. Missoula County Public Schools continues the district active resistance training tomorrow at 8 and to 5 p.m. at Paxton Elementary on the corner of Higgins and Evans Avenues. District spokeswoman Hatton Littman says the active resistance training is designed to train faculty and staff on how to respond to an intruder, one who may be armed, in their school.
It's designed to have people first learn about new strategies. it's a run, lock, fight approach. We used to have we still do have lockdown drills in our buildings, and until we have enough people trained, we won't be transitioning away from those. But this new training is designed to say, if you have an intruder in your building, number one, you should always avoid danger, run away from the danger. Number two, you should barricade or lock yourself into a safe place. But number three, if those two things don't provide enough of a safe retreat, then you need to have some skills to learn how to fight back until law enforcement can arrive on the scene and support you.
Littman says the first 4 minutes of a violent school intruder incident are critical because that's the minimum amount of time it takes for emergency responders to arrive on the scene. Participants tomorrow will join in classroom lecture and strategy sessions, then engage in some active training.
And they'll actually practice on local law enforcement that are sort of padded test dummies. They'll practice with the threat of guns shooting blanks and sort of loud noise and confusion going on. And they'll simulate a real scenario that they'll have to learn to respond to.
That noise could, understandably, alarm anyone who isn't aware they're overhearing a planned training session.
That's exactly right. It's important to remember that we have done this training on several Saturdays before. Tomorrow's a Friday. It's not a school day. School's actually out today as of noon. But if we have passersby in the neighborhood, Paxson has a lot of foot traffic around, and people may consider, hey, it's a Friday. I think it's a school day. There's an emergency. Don't freak out. This is actually a training exercise.
Littman says school staff who have participated previously in active resistance training sessions have universally praised the program, saying it helps them prepare not only for potential workplace emergencies, but also ones that might take place in their personal lives.
A new report published today looks at ways to increase public transportation options in three scenic regions of Montana, Wyoming, and Idaho. The Buses for Byways project uses population, tourism, and travel data, as well as survey responses from local businesses, to propose a regional network of transportation using existing services.
The idea was to look at ways in which people could get rides from folks that are already traveling on those roadways.
That's Norman Nickerson, the director of the University of Montana Institute for Tourism and Recreation Research. She says it'd be possible to increase access to trailheads, fishing sites, and other recreational opportunities by using a system that coordinates the various shuttle services already available.
Who are already in a business, and this is where it was targeted towards outfitters and guides who usually have transportation because they're transporting their clients with them somewhere.
Nickerson says hotels and ski resorts could also be a part of the transportation network. She says that right now it's just a concept, but if the plan was implemented, it would benefit local businesses, recreationists, and the environment.
A current business owner out there could generate a little bit more revenue by doing this. A recreationist could get a ride to where they want to go, and it could reduce the amount of traffic that's actually on those roads if there are more people in the various vehicles that are traveling around.
Nickerson says public comment on the project is encouraged. She can be reached at 406-243-2328.
And now for tonight's forecast. West of the Divide tonight, expect rain showers and a chance of thunderstorms. Some thunderstorms may produce gusty winds and small hail. There'll be lows in the upper 30s to mid-40s. Tomorrow, look for mostly cloudy skies with a slight chance of rain showers and a slight chance of thunderstorms, highs in the 60s. In central Montana, tonight, expect mostly cloudy skies with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms in the evening. Some thunderstorms may produce gusty winds and small hail. Tomorrow, look for mostly cloudy skies and a chance of showers and thunderstorms, highs 60 to 70. In southwest Montana, tonight, look for mostly cloudy skies in the evening with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms, lows 40 to 45. Tomorrow, expect increasing clouds with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms, highs 60 to 70. And now for the editorial comments of Dave Ditloff.
Last week, the Federal Environmental Protection Agency released a proposal it is calling the Clean Power Plan. If enacted, it would cut carbon pollution nationally by 30% from 2005 levels by the year 2030. Because Montana has already taken steps since 2005 to promote renewable energy and invest in energy efficiency, our state would only need to reduce our carbon pollution by 21% from existing levels. Under this new proposal, Montana would be afforded enormous flexibility to craft regulations that fit our economy, our natural resources, and our power needs. Though not a panacea for stopping climate change, the Clean Power Plan proposal would be a significant step in the right direction. In fact, it may be the most important policy to address global warming that this country has ever undertaken. Power plants are currently the largest source of carbon pollution in the country. If we are to act to address the changing climate, power plants can't be ignored. And act we should. 97% of peer-reviewed scientific studies agree that carbon pollution is altering the Earth's climate. As a result, around the world, we are seeing rising temperatures, more severe rainstorms, more intense hurricanes, and rising sea levels. Montana is getting more than our fair share of these impacts. Here in the state, trends show temperatures are up, mountain snowpack levels are down, spring runoff comes earlier, extreme storms are happening more often, forest fires are more frequent and intense, bark beetle infestations are destroying whole forests, and the list goes on. In short, here in Montana and around the globe, the problems created by the changing climate are considerable. And if we continue on the same carbon-emitting path we're on, the problems undoubtedly will become catastrophic. University of Montana climate scientist Dr. Steve Running put it into perspective in a recent Great Falls Tribune article on the Clean Power Plan. He said, quote, "If the American people are serious about slowing down climate change, this is the logical first step to do. And if we're not serious about climate change, we need to sit our children and grandchildren down and say, sorry, we don't feel like doing anything." Unquote. Unfortunately, that's exactly what many politicians want to do. In his official statement responding to the proposed Clean Power Plan, our own Congressman Steve Daines called the proposal a, quote, "war on coal that kills Montana jobs and hurts Montana families," unquote. Nowhere in his official statement does Congressman Dane use the terms climate change or global warming. That's because he considers himself a climate skeptic. In his mind, the jury is still out on whether carbon pollution is altering our climate. In one interview on Montana Public Radio, he even went so far as to say solar cycles may be causing it. It is this head-in-the-sand attitude that allows him to take such a misguided stand on the proposed Clean Power Plan. If he understood the overwhelmingly agreed-upon science and the gravity which it pretends, he might have a more nuanced position on the proposal's impact on lost jobs and the economy. If he understood the science, Congressman Daines might think more about the crop damages farmers face from extreme weather events like the recent hailstorm near Billings. He might be a little put out by the lost revenues hotels, restaurants, and gas stations encounter when major wildfires erupt around the state and tourists disappear. He might be upset about the stress and added family medical bills caused by increased asthma attacks brought on by the smoke from those same fires. He might consider the clients fishing outfitters lose in late summer when rivers are closed due to high stream temperatures and low flows. He might be concerned about the long-term health of the timber industry faced with forests dying off because of bark beetle infestations. With an understanding of climate science, the proposed Clean Power Plan should be viewed as a job security plan, not a jobs-killing one. Reducing carbon certainly hasn't hurt the economies of the nine northeastern states working to reduce their state's carbon pollution through the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative. Since 2009, these nine states have cut their carbon emissions by 18%, while their economies grew by 9.2%. By comparison, over the same period, the emissions in the other 41 states fell by only 4%, while their economies grew by only 8.8%. Montana is in the bullseye regarding the impacts of climate change. Left unchecked, it would devastate our forests, waters, wildlife, and agricultural lands. Our way of life and our economy are at stake. I sure don't want to have to explain to my kids and my future grandkids why my generation did little to reduce the carbon pollution causing climate change. I want my government to act. The Clean Power Plan is a good step in the right direction. It would cut carbon from our most polluting industry, and it would allow each state the flexibility to craft its carbon reduction plan in ways it best sees fit. The science of climate change is too clear and too important to willfully ignore. We owe it to future generations to act. Please call Congressman Daines and tell him Montanans deserve better. This is Dave Ditloff, Regional Representative for the National Wildlife Federation.
Dave Ditloff is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed don't necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Conrad Scheid.
And I'm Corin Cates Carney. Thanks for listening. And please join Edwin O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.